All right, welcome to another edition of the Home Studio Craft Podcast. Welcome, Tippins. How's it going?
It's going good.
Good.
It's going good.
Good.
Yep.
I'm Scott, by the way. That's Tippins. Scott Tippins.
Peace.
Peace.
What's up?
Not much, man. It's just, it's been a good week. Wrote a new tune that I'm really happy about, so.
Yeah, it's...
What you've heard.
Stuck in my head, yeah.
Good.
It's catchy. Yeah.
It's good. Yeah. It was a fun process writing it, and it came about pretty quickly, so. It was not always the case. Definitely not.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we... Yeah. Nunez came over this past weekend to at least finish one or two songs.
Yeah.
We did not finish the songs, but we got great progress done.
Good.
We just have a lot of songs that have been around for like
good.
A year and a half, 2 years, you know.
Yeah.
And then some come together, like you said, so
yeah.
quick. So
yeah,
that's a
true.
Good sign that it came together quickly.
Yeah. I think like the better songs do, right? Right. You know, if it's at least that's been my experience, and the stuff that I'm like working at, I usually don't enjoy as much. I don't know if it's because it's so much work, like putting them down and recording them and arranging them. But anyway, it was a good week.
Yeah.
So I wanted to discuss really what it's like for new songwriters. You know, people who are not so much new songwriters, but songwriters who are new to recording, right? Like how they get into it. Like what are the steps that they can kind of follow to not only record, but just make sure that they've got the minimal amount of equipment that they need to have. You know, I'm going to assume that they don't have a dedicated space to record in. So how can they acoustically treat the area and so forth where they're going to be recording? And then once they get all that done, how do they actually start recording? Like how do they, you know, approach the song, right? How do they make those decisions? So I think the first thing that anybody's going to consider, you know, as a piece of equipment to buy is going to be the interface, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, that's
like that's the fundamental piece. Obviously, we're going to assume everybody's got a computer already.
Yeah.
Right. So the interface and then the digital audio workstation. And the cool thing is a lot of the interfaces will come packaged with like the beginner's edition of a DAW. Mm. Like the Scarlett, you know, comes the new Focusrite Scarlett comes with Ableton Live Lite. Is that what it's called? I think it's
yeah,
Lite.
Yeah, right? I think so.
Yeah.
In your experience, like, I've only ever really messed in Ableton and a few others, like Pro Tools a little bit. But as far as, like, the top couple DAWs between, like, Ableton, Logic, Pro Tools, like, Logic's for, like, Mac users mainly, right?
Yeah.
And then... Like what are some of the key? Have you messed with both of those too?
No, I mean I've read about Logic online, different things, but I haven't really messed around in it. The same thing with Pro Tools. The only other DAW that I've experienced with is Mark of the Unicorn Performer, but I haven't used that in a really really long time. So definitely not. You know, qualified to speak on any of those other platforms. But I would say as far as choosing a DAW, I mean, they're all going to essentially do the same thing. And it's just a matter of personal preference, right? Like if I was going to open up a Pro Studio, I would probably go with Pro Tools, right? Because that's pretty much what you're going to find in all the
A lot
Pro
of like
studios.
DJs and stuff I know love Ableton as well, the live version.
Yeah, because it's the way it's set up, I mean, it's perfect for DJs.
Yeah.
Yeah, if for those of you who know Ableton. But this, you know, it also has its traditional, you know, recording features that you would use in arrangement view in Ableton.
Yeah, exactly.
That are going to look like...
Yeah.
Anything else. So I'd just say it's, you know, if you get a piece of software free with your interface, check it out. You know, and talk to your friends or other musicians. And, you know, there's a ton of information online and online forums about different DAWs.
Yeah.
And so then after the interface and the DAW, obviously they're going to need to have, you know, a couple of mics or at least one microphone. And then the next thing is, you know, headphones and monitors. So I'm going to say that if you don't have money, just get yourself a decent set of headphones. And if you're a vocalist, which I'm going to assume that you are or you're working with a vocalist, you probably want to get some closed-back headphones. And the reason is that although they're not going to be as accurate when you're recording because of the stereo field's not going to be as open, and you're also going to get a little bit more bass response with the closed-back headphones. But if you're on a budget and you can just get either open-back or closed-back, I would say get the closed-back because when you're recording vocals or your vocalist is recording vocals, you're not going to get the bleed from the closed-back headphones that you would with the open-backs.
Okay.
And if you have the money, then get both, right? And if you have the money, get yourself a set of monitors too. But that kind of leads us into the next situation. So if you don't have a dedicated space, like yourself, for example, right?
Yeah.
So you're recording in your living room?
Yes. Yeah.
Right. So that, you know, so wherever it is in your house that you're recording, if you don't have a dedicated space, you have to consider the acoustic treatments.
Yeah. Like so, I have two couches in there.
It's good.
No carpet.
Yeah. That's good too.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. So, and you have, what kind of monitors are you using?
I'll let you know next week. I'm not even like sure which
some,
I have.
Some Chinese knockoffs?
No, I think they're
some KRKs like or something.
Sony something.
Oh, yeah.
I truly don't know.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever you have, the thing is, if you're using monitors and you're not in a dedicated recording space, you want to try to, you know, get as much acoustic treatment in that room you can, right, with what you've got around the house. So, you know, if you've got windows in your bedroom, I would suggest, like, just covering them up with some blankets. You know, look at your, like, the first reflection points. That's basically where the sound coming out of your speakers is going to hit the boundaries in your room, like your walls, so forth. So if you can determine where they are, you know, put up some blankets or pillows or whatever at those areas.
So, like, literally looking at the, like, amp or whatever it is, or, like, your speakers and literally having something lined up with.
Yes. Yeah, so what you would do is this. The way to determine your first reflection points is you could basically sit in the position where your listening position is, right? So sit there. And then you have somebody else with a mirror, like a little handheld mirror, just basically go to the left side speaker and start walking with that mirror, starting at the speaker, along the wall, right? Just keep walking along the wall. And then where you, sitting in your listening position, see the first image of a speaker in that mirror, that's going to be your first reflection point. So where the sound coming out is going to hit the wall first. So you should put some acoustic treatment there. So if you get some like Oralex foam pads, it's kind of more, there I got more as like a diffuser than not really so much of sound absorption, but a diffuser. And you can do that on each side. Or if you've got money, or extra money, right? You can actually go on to I think it's gikaudio.com. They make acoustic panels. So if you can put a couple screws in the wall or whatever and get a panel and just hang it up there, you can take it down when you're done recording if you have to do that, if it's in your living room or something like that. So it's not like hanging up there all the time. unless you're like.
So what's the difference between like an acoustic panel and just foam, like for what it does for the sound?
The absorptive quality of the material that's used in that. So the foam is gonna absorb less of that sound than say rock wool or fiberglass or even like recycled cotton batting, you know. So that's essentially the main difference.
Okay.
So the acoustic, the foam padding is the most affordable, and you know, so if you're on a budget, at least get that. That's better than not having anything.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is you want to, like, if you're working at a desk in your bedroom, you know, you've got your monitors on your desk, just try to isolate those monitors from your desk, decouple them by putting some acoustic padding underneath the monitors, right? So it doesn't transfer that sound into the floor and so forth. And then also place them as close to the wall as possible without touching the wall. And if you can, you really want to put some, you know, like a bass trap or something behind those, so it absorbs the bass frequencies that are basically, you know, reflecting from the room and also going back from the speaker, so that you're not going to get that bass rumble so much. So,
I'm definitely not doing some of those and wouldn't have even thought to. So,
yeah, because it's going to affect, you know, because if you're, once again, you know, if you're not just using headphones to monitor your recordings or to mix, right? What you hear coming out of your speakers is going to be directly affected by the acoustic treatments in your room. So if you don't have any acoustic treatments in your room, it's going to be really hard to mix on those speakers, because you're not going to, well, let's just put it this way. What you're hearing on those speakers and you get that mix will not necessarily translate to different mediums of listening, right?
Sure,
like iPhone, you know, headphones, cars, or what have you, right?
So yeah, the bass might be way louder or whatever.
Because you don't really know, like, so, but you can learn your monitors, right? But it's a process.
Yeah.
So, but I would definitely say it's worth the whatever you can afford, definitely do some minimal type of acoustic treatment.
Yeah.
So that being said, once you get your space set up, you've got your mic and so forth, and now you've got a song that you want to record. So what's the next step? Now, for me, you know, the first thing that I try to do, you know, when I've got a new song is just to figure out what's the right tempo that I'm going to record at. You want to make sure that you get the tempo right from the get-go, because, I mean, it's not so bad if you record like all MIDI drums and all MIDI synths at one tempo, because that's easily changed, right?
Yeah,
but once you start laying down vocals, or you're playing, you know, bass or guitar,
yeah,
or, you know, so then
you,
you have audio tracks.
Yeah,
it's a lot. Yeah, so you really want to make sure you get the tempo right. And some of the ways you can do that is, you know, if you're like playing piano and you're just got the groove and you're singing the tune, just kind of keep that groove in your head. You know, just pull up your phone. You can go to any one of like the metronome apps you can download for free. And a lot of them will just have a tap tempo option.
Yeah.
You just tap it out, or in your DAW, you can do the same thing. If you have the tap tempo option, do that. Or you can just like mess around with different tempo settings. And, you know, as much as one or two, you know, beats per minute will make a difference. So take your time, figure out what that tempo is, and then start with that. And then either you can start recording the, like, your main instrument, keyboards, guitar, bass, whatever that happens to be, using a click track on the DAW. Or like when you guys record, do you use a click track or do you try to put together a beat?
We usually, if the drums aren't there yet, we'll do the click track.
Yeah. What do you prefer?
I prefer playing the drums.
Yeah.
So I know what they're going to be kind of doing in the song.
Yeah.
And it gives a sense of, like, if the chorus is coming up, it makes it, like, it'll make me play differently if
right.
the drums are acting like if there's like a drum fill coming,
yeah,
up, I might have a no little doubt. More attack or something.
Yeah.
So I love recording the drums.
Yeah.
I just like that feeling of the engine behind you.
100%.
But we do both. Like you, we recorded a piano song that doesn't have drums. So, like you were saying, like I just sat there with the metronome and
yep.
struggled.
Is it just piano and vocal?
For like the first like minute and a half of the song, yeah.
Right.
So yeah, it still had to time out well. There's some parts I was dragging a little bit, but
right.
Yeah. So I like recording the drums. So.
Yeah, I agree. It's like some songs lend themselves naturally to like, you know, creating a beat. Like if you're in Ableton, for example, since that's the DAW that we both use, you know, using any one of their, you know, their drum plugins. I happen to use Easy Drummer all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can go in and just pull some different, you know, drum loops down an Easy Drummer. And then you can modify that too. It's all MIDI. So if you can edit out some kick drums or snares or whatever. And then, you know, whatever, if it's, you know, if there's different drum beats for the chorus, you know, put down a drum beat for the verse, chorus, whatever the arrangement is that you've decided prior to recording, right? So is it going to be like verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, or just verse, chorus, you know, and then chorus yeah. out or whatever that is, right? So decide that, come up with a drum beat, and then, you know, then it's going to be like the, usually for me, it's going to be like the main, you know, harmonic instruments, which is normally going to be guitar for me. So keyboards, or if you're a bass player, right? Maybe you're just going to, you know, play the bass groove, right? You've got a bass groove for the chorus, you got a bass groove for the verse, play that, then come back in and overlay your, like, you know, your chords on,
yeah.
on your keyboard or whatever. But for me, it's usually guitar. I'll play, you know, the guitar tracks through the verse and chorus and the other parts. Then I'll go back in and basically put down bass, and then I'll put down a scratch vocal. And then from there, it's just layering in the, you know, other instruments according to how the arrangement is.
Yeah. Yeah, you use, on your, this song you showed me, like using synths and stuff to fill that space amazingly. I want to go back to Easy Drummer really fast though.
Sure.
So that's essentially like industry standard at this point if you don't have a drummer, right?
I mean, that's, yeah. I mean,
or even in like a lot of different like pop songs and stuff, or even like I see it used a lot on like YouTube tutorials and stuff.
Yeah.
Just talk a little bit about like that and how easy it makes it.
How easy Easy Drummer is.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. It really is easy. But it's like anything else. You know, you, all right, so it's just a collection of different, you know, grooves that professional drummers have played in a studio, and the quality of the samples are great. And you know, there's a couple other programs out there, like Steven Slate makes a drum program. So there's, you know, and then obviously like Ableton's got its own, you know, plugins and stuff that come with their own grooves that mm-hmm. you can use. But for Easy Drummer, I just like the quality of the sounds. If you're going for that like real drum sound, right? If that's what the song calls for,
yeah,
then I really like that a lot. And yeah, so you would just find a groove that works with the melody, works with the chord changes, like the tempo of the song, right? So you want to find something that, you know, is, you don't want like a speed metal,
yeah,
you
yeah,
know, beat
double kick
for a pop tune. So just find something that works for the verse, and or maybe it's like the same beat throughout the entire song, and different things change on top of that. And, you know, they've got, you know, fills, they've got intro pieces, pre-chorus sections, and they don't all necessarily have to be that, right? Like the pre-chorus stuff can sound great on a verse.
Yeah.
Or, you know, so don't be afraid to change things up. But I really like it a lot. It saves, although it's time consuming to kind of like find the right feel, because, you know, it really establishes the vibe of the song.
Yeah.
Right. So you've got to make sure that it, you know,
and you can edit it up yourself and
anytime
stuff too.
Yeah, it's like anything else. To make it. Yeah, you can swap out like the, you know, closed hi-hats or open hi-hats or cymbals or whatever you want to do. And then you can actually get in and change like different snare drum sizes, and sometimes it makes a difference, but most times I just go with like what the stock settings are for the most part. And then
I feel like that's such like a lifesaver for people that obviously aren't drummers, but still want to be able to put out music. Because if you're a guitarist, you could figure out bass, mess
piano.
Around on a keyboard a little bit, but it's hard to mess around on a drum kit if
Forget
you've never
it.
Played. And
yeah. I mean, to me, the best is, you know, working in the context of a band with a drummer and putting something together like that. Because, you know, because if you're a solo artist just doing it, it's all coming from you, unless you're collaborating with somebody on the internet or something.
Yeah.
But
and the feeling of playing, like I was saying earlier, a little bit about the engine, like I like recording two drums, but like playing live or just rehearsing with a drummer and stuff, like it just feels different.
It's totally different.
It makes you want to play a little faster and stuff. The energy's there.
Yeah, and plus you have that give and take. So, that to me is the ultimate. But, you know, for most people, that won't be a possibility, right? So if you're one of the fortunate few who are working with a drummer, it's awesome. So where were we? Oh, yeah. So we talked about Easy Drummer. And then the next thing is keyboards. You know, it's like finding if the song calls for keyboards, if you want keyboards, like all my stuff definitely has keyboards in it. So it's like finding the right synth patches for the song, because that can completely change everything.
Yeah, a lot of times I'm sitting there, like I know kind of what I want to hear in my head, and I'm sitting there, like we talked about, like there's so many different synth names and stuff. Sometimes I'm just scrolling through. It's like, oh.
Yeah, those synth names rarely correlate to the sound.
Yeah, it's like ethereal.
I think those guys are like, I think.
Yeah.
Not sure.
Yeah, it's always like ethereal names and stuff.
Yeah, I love seeing some of the names. I like seeing some of the names that they use to reference like some classic synth sounds, or even like some of the classic like drum machine sounds, like the 808 and things. It's kind of cool. But that to me is like, you know, I don't want to say frustrating because it sounds kind of negative. I'll say time consuming. I spent a lot of time trying to find the right synth sounds to you know, fit the vibe of the song. And that, and actually, like we were discussing earlier, like even some like random synth sound that you don't think would work sounds really odd, but might be the thing that like the song's calling for, and send it in a different direction, a better direction. Yeah. And I've had that happen, many times. So it's like, you know, I think as songwriters, you kind of imagine, at least at the outset, like how the song's going to sound, right? Or how, like in your ideal, you know, in the ideal world, like this is what it's going to sound like. And then I'll come in and try to just lay that down as to what I think it should sound like. And it does not sound anything like what I heard in my head. So then it's like, okay, well, let's figure out where the song wants to go. And that part, you know, just requires like openness and experimentation just to let that unfold.
Yeah. Yeah. What, adding one thing, like some weird synth sound will literally completely change. Like I'll be like, oh, now I want the breakdown to be different at the end because
Right.
Because we added this and now right. that could be like a main part of it.
Right.
So.
Yep.
Yeah. It changes a lot, just each thing you add. So.
Yeah. And if you have like something, you know, interesting, like kind of in the background, it, you know, it could affect the whole mood of that verse, right? Mm-hmm. It can be a really subtle part back in the background, but it can change. Like you can take major chords and a melody in a major key and have, you know, notes that are within the major scale, but have a dark sounding synth patch, just changes the vibe of, you know, it adds some mood to that section of the song, yeah. whatever that is. Yeah. So yeah, synths are, I love working with synthesizers. So, but I'm not a keyboard player, so, but I am.
We should do a synth deep dive one of these episodes, because I do look at some of those,
you know,
settings
we should
on
do?
There, and I really am just like confused.
We should interview my buddy Javier.
Let's do it.
Yeah, and then we can get him to, yeah, let's do that for next
That'd
next
be
week.
Awesome, because I look at those synth, the million different setting options and stuff in there, and I genuinely have no clue what I'm looking at.
He's got like some beautiful synths, like all these like classic synths, Oberheims, you know, these Roland Junos, like from the 80s. They got he's got a ton of stuff. So yeah, we could talk to him. I'll see if I can set that up for the next pod.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, I'd love to understand an ounce of what I'm doing when I'm messing with them a little bit.
Yeah, we'll see. Let's see if we can get them to give us like an overview of like the main parameters, so we can turn people onto that. Like, what are the things to mess with? Like for people who are interested in like, you know, becoming sound designers or just sound designing their own songs.
Yeah.
So. But anyway, so tying it back into the recording of the song, so, you know, laying down the synth parts, and you've already got your scratch vocals. So once you've got all the you know, the instrumental parts down, or the instrument parts recorded, and then it comes time to, you know, record the main vocal tracks. So the lead vocal, and, you know, I would just do a bunch of takes, you know, all at once, as long as your voice holds out, you know, you don't get fatigued. And then, you know, do a compilation track after that. So you take the best parts of those different vocal tracks, put them into one really super great, you know, vocal take. And, you know, any harmonies or backing vocals that you want to do. And then, you know, then comes the mixing process. You do your export and then upload it to one of the mastering websites, unless you know, you master it yourself within your DAW, which is always an option. So, and that I think that's pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, that's if you're that's lays it out right there for you.
Yep, now it's just doing it. Yeah. So all right, you good, Tippins?
I'm good. Yeah,
me too, man. So I'll work on getting hold of Javier for next week.
Yeah, that would be great.
We'll get some tutelage on synthesizers.
Yeah, I'll put together some questions for him.
Yeah,
because like going through the presets, like you mentioned, is like all I do when I'm messing with synths too. But it would be nice to be like, ooh, I like this sound, but I want to, like, just change it a little bit and know how to change that.
Right.
So, you know?
Yep.
Just know the why behind it a little bit. So that'd be awesome. Yeah.
All right. Synth School coming up next pod. All right. Until then, I'm Scott.
I'm Tippins.
Have a good week.
Peace.
Peace.